Today's program is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we are coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We are back for our fall season. Today is Wednesday, September 13th, 2017. This is the 152nd episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is an outstanding food writer and the founder of an awesome new food-focused travel guide, and I will introduce her fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to have a great network. Surround yourself with good people who you can rely on for advice, recommendations, and general support, as it will make whatever you do in life easier. Whether you are starting up a business or keeping up with day-to-day work, a strong network will make things better. So as the Beatles say, get by with a little help from your friends. That's my tip today. Now, I'm very excited to have my guest calling in from Los Angeles. It is Carrie Tannenbaum. She is a food writer, digital content strategist, and the founder of Bitesy, an online travel guide and booking platform for food-driven explorers. Most notably, Carrie helped launch Delish.com, MSN, and Hearst culinary site featuring recipes, chefs, cooking shows, restaurant trends, and food news. Over her writing tenure, she's contributed to publications such as Food & Wine, Food Network, The New York Post, and Refinery 29, and many more. And Carrie holds holds certificates in cuisine and patisserie from Le Cordon Bleu Paris, and an MA in food studies from NYU, where she is an adjunct professor. So hello, Carrie, are you there?
Hi, Sherry, so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on the show. How are things out in LA?
I was going to say, a couple hours ago it was overcast, so if you were going to say, how is sunny LA, I was going to say it's overcast. But no, in traditional fashion, it is now clear blue. Guys.
All right. Yeah, we're having a little drizzle here right now. So I think everyone normally says sunny LA. So
yeah, we have some weather sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
But I wish I was there in person because I really, wanted to be able to be there in Brooklyn.
I know. And you were in New York recently, but timing-wise didn't work for us here. But you're here on the show and I'm in Bushwick. I love to start out and find out how people got into the industry and how you became a food writer to start. So you want to start with that?
Yeah, sure. I didn't have a journalism background, which, a lot of us don't. Sometimes, people have a different kind of writing background. But I probably had a little bit of writing in my blood. My sister actually launched a magazine in the 90s about natural living and organic living. And I had been working in television in the 90s. And then, of course, it's sort of coincidental that we are doing this the week of 9/11 because I was working at Nickelodeon at the time in marketing. In event marketing, and we had like a conference call, the week after when everyone was sort of back to business but still in a state of shock. We had a conference call with some place, I can't remember who, that was not in New York, and that they had some pressure on us to deliver some things, and I just remember we hung up our end abruptly, just being like, you know what? Screw this stuff.
Yeah.
What does everybody here in the room really want to do? And I knew for a long time, you know, I had this passion for food and that I really just, you know, wanted to somehow transition into food and into writing. But I don't think I totally knew that at the moment when I had decided that I was going to apply to the food NYU Food Studies program, which you mentioned. So it was really from that I got into food writing with the first course that I took, actually coincidentally taught by Andrew Carmelini's wife, Gwen Hyman, just a couple months after September 11th. That was it. I took a class in food writing in the master's program at NYU.
Wow, I didn't know that was when and how you started. So then how did you get your first writing gigs? Because you've been writing for the Food Network for a long time.
Well, actually, I had worked previously at the Food Network before. So when I left Nickelodeon, I did actually, you know, I thought, okay, I need a credential in food, and right now I'm in television. So I did transition over to the Food Network, but at that time I was actually doing a sort of what was called ad sales marketing, partnership marketing, creating content on air for the advertisers. But I got my first writing gig, really, I have to say, you know, again, it was through NYU that first, you know, I was really starting my career over, but I took on an internship, which is what, you know, a lot of people may or may not really want to do, but I was lucky enough to get an internship at Restaurant Business Magazine. And at the same time, when I did that, a lot of the blogs were sort of just happening. Well, I should say at Restaurant Business, they did let me write a little bit of small stuff here and there. And I did write about the Shake Shack, which had first opened as a hot dog cart. And so I got to write a little thing. It's still sort of funny to think about that as one of probably the first real things that I wrote that was published about the little hot dog cart.
Yeah.
But actually, the real thing that I got published, it was through Restaurant Business that I was able to meet, I was connected with Andrea Strong, a
strong
prolific
buzz.
Writer.
Yes.
Strong buzz at the time. Mm-hmm. And we became great friends. We lived around the corner from each other, and we started eating out together. And, you know, she was really a great help in giving me contacts, which is at the top of the show when you talked about networking. You know, it really helps to get someone who can help connect you and believe in you. And so she had offered up some, I think, editors, and I took a Media Bistro class on pitching.
I remember
and
Media
Bistro.
I was
able to pitch the New York Post, and one day came home to a message on my answering machine from the editor at the time of, I think it was the Sunday paper, Steve Lynch, who basically was like, hey, I got your pitch, which I had sent many months before, of course, and we have a hole, and we'd like to fill it by tomorrow. So I had a date that night, but I was like, no, should I do it? Should I not do it? And I sort of knew, you know, you kind of have to do it when they call you because they may not call you again. So that was it. I wrote a story for the New York Post and then went on to write several more for them pretty regularly.
That's awesome. No, I'm thinking the things, the tools or things I had used. I mean, Media Bistro was big back then. Also, I mean, having been in the food studies program at NYU, it was a huge foot in the door for me as well. I remember Mitchell Davis had taught my food writing class, and it was like a lead into things with James Beard Foundation. And so I think a lot has come out of that food studies program, you know, relationships and connections, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like it's very unique. I mean, especially at the time, it was only about 5 years old, so it was still sort of in its infancy. Now it's been around for, I'd say, about 20 years. But Mitchell, yes, very involved back then. He was still doing his PhD at the time when I was there. And just even the first contact I had with them, it felt like, okay, this is where I belong because these are my like-minded people. And a lot of people definitely have come out of it, you know, from people in PR like you and you know, writers, but now it's moved into even more of sort of sustainability and other, you know, hot topics that are happening within the general food world.
Yeah, the program's grown tremendously, and they have all those overseas degrees too that you can travel around.
Oh yeah, I was on the first trip to Italy we took with Mitchell. Actually, he did lead the trip, and it was pretty fun and pretty educational as well.
Well, cool. Well, maybe that travel. That's a little segue into what you're doing now. So how did you come up with the idea with Bitesy?
Bitesy, which, you know, rhymes with sightseeing, because that's I consider myself a culinary traveler. I know that you do as well. We're driven
yes.
by food, and you know, a lot of people now out there. You know, as I was working, you mentioned that I worked at Hearst when they launched Delish mm-hmm. and stayed on there for about 6 years. You know, all along, I'm sort of went on a lot of trips myself and searching for that advice of, you know, where can I really eat like a local, what's up-to-date content, and also things to do, because I was enjoying experiential travel as well, which has grown tremendously over the last, you know, 7-8 years. So I just felt like there was a void, and I was ready to leave there. And so I set out to kind of create what I think is going to be helpful to people like me and people in our industry and the growing number of, you know, Anthony Bourdain wannabes.
And there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
I remember when I first heard about that you were doing Bitesy, and I was like, yes, that's, I mean, I'm your audience. I'm it. I mean, I was looking on your website, and you have one of the first lines about what you're about is, we will hop on a plane, bus, train, and taxi to save our one life-changing dish. And I'm like, yep, I would.
Yeah.
So you're speaking to me, and I know you're speaking to a lot of people and that are now, everyone, you know, everyone's into food and travel for food. It's, you know, become a big thing.
Yeah, but I think the struggle is there is great content out there, and I think there is a lot of content out there, and it's hard to sort of boil it down to, okay, I have 3 days here, you know, really, where should I eat? So hopefully we're going to become, you know, an authoritative voice that can break through the clutter of all of that. And, you know, I myself am fans of a lot of other sites out there, from The Infatuation to Eater and Tasting Table and millions of actually great blogs of locals living abroad. But, you know, hopefully we can be a complement to what's already out there as well.
Yes. And I think you can. I think those sites are awesome. But there's more room for advice or helping people out. So I want to hear more about how Bitesy is, how you started and where it's going. But before that, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and talk more with Carrie. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Carrie Tannenbaum. She is the founder of Bitesy, an online travel guide and booking platform for food-driven explorers. And as I was saying before, I am a food-driven explorer. So, Carrie, I want to find out a little how you launched the site, and I know you did a Kickstarter campaign. So how did that work, and what was your experience?
Well, I did a Kickstarter first because, you know, it is really challenging when you're not working for a large corporation like Hearst when we were launching the list, just to be able to do everything, you know, that you want to do. So I knew that I needed some capital. And, you know, the Kickstarter just seemed like a great, fun way also to get other people involved. You know, the one thing with Kickstarter is it takes a crowd. So, and it takes time. I was super lucky because I had thought about doing it, but like right before I thought, okay, I'm going to do it this month, I saw that Food Tech Connect, which is a great organization, they were having like a workshop being led by Lisa Fetterman, who runs Nomiku, like right. home sous vide company. And she had done two hugely successful Kickstarter campaigns. So I forked up the money, and I went to her one-day workshop, and I think that was really the key to me being able to have a successful Kickstarter, because it takes more time to plan it than you would think. And so it's a 30-day thing. It's 24/7. You have to really reach out to every single person that may have crossed your path, because you never know who's going to be the person that's going to put you over the limit, including ex-boyfriends. So, it was hard, but
I love it.
Yeah, Lisa was just like, go after everyone, and I'm just like, no, I don't want to. But that really did help, and it was crazy. And, obviously Facebook helps and all those things. But, just as an anecdote, I like to say that it pays to be nice, literally, because one of the best and biggest backers I had was a total stranger that I had met. So
yeah, niceness. I that was a tip of mine at some point. Be nice.
Yeah.
I would do that tip again.
when you meet someone and how they can help you and you help them. And I was really lucky because, obviously I'm a very chatty person. So I connected with a gentleman over coffee in a snowstorm in New York City earlier that year when I really didn't know I was going to do a Kickstarter. And he had a love of restaurants, and so we had a nice exchange over email, and then I told him what I was doing, and in the end he was hugely he was critical for actually me having a successful campaign.
But you did, and when were you able to launch the site?
So I was able to launch the site this past June. There was, a lot of content that needed to be built and development and design, and went through a few rounds of finding just the right people that understood, the vision and everything behind it. So we launched in June, and we're building content. Sherry, hopefully you're going to add some to it from your travels.
I would love to. I'm on board for sure. Do you want to talk a little about the different way you have the site set up, the different categories? You have some city guides, get inspired, eat, drink, go,
sure.
Do.
Yeah. No. So, for me, culinary travel isn't limited to where am I going to eat. So, in addition to bars and hole in the walls and listings for restaurants, there's also all those shops, the street food, the food halls, markets, and all of the things that, I love Paris, but I've been there, and I'm not necessarily going to go to the Louvre. I'm going to spend my day going around and eating. So, between the meals, there's all these other little things to do, too. So,
yeah.
We do have city guides.
I agree.
But within those city guides, there's also information on food tours and cooking classes and shopping the market and cooking classes, as well as just from around the world, different longer vacations you can take. For instance, like Peggy Markle, who's been running food culinary vacations for, I think, 25 years, it has an amazing trip that's on the site to go to India for,
days. I saw that, or I saw one of your headlines are very clever, and I like them a lot. There was one that said the best way to drop 10 grand, and it was like to go to India.
Yeah. You need someone, some of us can do that.
Yeah.
Some of us can't. But next time anyone, you inherit any money, that should be, the top thing on your list to do is to travel with Peggy to India. She really knows what she's doing.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I was like, yeah, that sounds like a good thing to do with 10 grand if I happen to have an extra lying around. The categories are very clever, and you have it's helpful. There's the hashtags or the things like solo travelers and like a local and things that will help people depending on what they're looking for, different styles of travel.
Yep.
So, so you started out, you have, what do you have now? You have, you started out with Paris and New York City.
Yeah. So, you know, the big culinary capitals of the world are, you know, I would say, you know, Barcelona, New York, Rome, Paris, and those are places that even if you've been before, likely you go back. And then, you know, we're growing to hopefully have, you know, 25 cities by the end of the year that would include everything from Lima to, you know, Austin, Nashville, and, you know, everyone seems to be, everyone this year, and you included, I think, is going to Lisbon.
I did. I went to Lisbon this year. Yeah. Yeah, I've noticed a few people going there too. Lisbon was great. It was good for solo dining as well as I could see being there with other people and yeah, a strong food scene.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I mean, it really is endless because there's always new discoveries and everyone is seeking out that next thing, and then there seems to be always like a hot city that, you know, what was it, a couple of years ago? Everyone's going to Iceland.
Iceland, yes.
You know, and now more and more people are going because those other early explorers went to Iceland. Not that Iceland hasn't been around for a long time, but the one thing I can tell you, though, is working on a travel site, it really just makes you want to go everywhere, and yet I have to spend, you know, 24/7 working on the site, so I'm not always able to go anywhere, which is why it's great to be able to tap into this network that I've had for being in food media for 15 years, to bring other contributors onto the site, which if anyone's listening, you know, feel free to send me an email.
Yeah, no, you have to, that's good you put it out there because as much as you and I love to travel and go places, it's only so many places you can go in a year.
Yeah.
So what's next, or you're just, and how are you like connecting with, let's say, tour providers or people? Is that just, are you, you know, is that just through research or referrals or the people that you're using
it is,
as contributors?
You know, it's curated. So, you know, over the years, I personally have been on many tours myself, you know, from going on these tours through Venice of the Bacchari to even, honestly, you know, I having had to work on this and do more research, I was doing tours in New York as well. I actually ran a tour when I worked at for ICE, the Institute of Culinary Education. I ran a coffee tour a couple times.
We went really?
To a bunch of different coffee places. Yeah, and I would like to do that again. Actually, for the Kickstarter, we ran a tour, a Prohibition walking tour, which is another tour that's being offered on the site as well. We're going to do that again with Diana Pettet, who's an expert in all things cheese and cocktails. But and with that, you know, it really starts out in a very good way. I don't want to give it all away, but it really sets things into the historical context, too, which is a lot of what these food tours do. You know, when you travel to another city, you know, obviously we're saying we're driven by food, but at the same time, what you get on a food tour is also just putting into context the city itself. So I remember in Venice when we were in the Jewish ghetto and getting all of the, you know, the history that I hadn't gotten just from, you know, taking a regular tour through. But even in New York, you can be, you know, a tourist in your own backyard. I took this trip, Scott Wiener runs Scott's Pizza Tours.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know him. He's
I know. I mean, I know of him. I'm surprised I haven't met him at this point, but I've known of his tours for a long time. And he's done very well. He's become very popular. It's a great tour.
No, I mean, you should have him on the show.
Yeah. Because, I was thinking of that too.
Genius. And he is, they just had a documentary on him because he's also a pizza box collector. But I took his tour, and luckily with him, I had connected with him, and he said, take the tour that I'm leading. And it's basically a bus tour on a school bus with music that's super fun. And, you know, everyone on the tour pretty much was locals from, you know, New York and from Queens and Brooklyn, Long Island, Westchester. And we started at Lombardi's, and he taught us all about, you know, the oven and the history behind it and how the crust should be in the bottom and the charring. And then we went to Harlem and we went to Queens, and you know, it was just, it was so well done, it was so much fun. And I thought, you know, this is one of the greatest things I've ever done, and I've lived in New York my entire life, you know, and I do know about pizza. So, you know, it's definitely, the site is not just for if you're going to travel, it's also for those who are looking for just something fun and foodie driven.
Yeah, experiences in your own city. No, it's a great point, because yeah, I think that happens a lot. I don't know. I'm living in New York City, and I'm not. I mean, the tourists come and do things like whatever Empire State Building or things. Then I'm like, you don't do them yourself because you live here. I have done that. Not recently. I have done that. But no, it's a good point that there are. That you're providing these you know, information about all of the amazing stuff, because I know there are tons of culinary tours here. In different neighborhoods, you know, everywhere.
Yeah, no, and we're adding more and more, and, you know, there's tours in Arthur Avenue, there's cooking classes like, there's one in particular, like Pizza a Casa on the Lower East Side, where you learn to make pizza the authentic way, and, you know, you wouldn't necessarily discover that walking by, you know, you might miss it, but it's one of those things that's on my list as well.
Right. No, it's great, and I love what you're doing. I think the site's awesome, so I will look into those more. And we're going to take another break here, and then we're going to come back and we're going to play my speed round game and talk some industry news. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. And we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Carrie Tannenbaum of Bitesy, and it is time for my speed round game. So, Carrie, what this is I'm going to give you a couple of choices, and you just pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Okay. Are we starting with that?
If you'd like. That's like a bonus one.
Chocolate.
Okay. Cool. You're great at the game. Okay. So, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
That's been interesting. I think I'm liking the all-inclusive.
All right. That's Danny Meyer would like that.
I like Danny Meyer.
And, well, we'll see if he likes your next answer to this one, because I happen to have as my next one. In-N-Out Burger or Shake Shack?
Oh, honestly, Shake Shack.
Okay, then Dan.
And tell him that this Santa Monica location is better than the one even in
really?
Madison Square Park. Yeah.
Okay.
It is. Yeah.
He's got how many does he have in L.A. now? Three?
Yeah, we have two and one that's coming, I think.
Yeah, he's going to have like 20 in no time.
Yeah. I'm sure. I'm happy about that, though.
Yeah, it's good. Okay, so a few more. How about tour groups or solo travel?
See, that's tough, because I like solo travel, but then integrated and augmented with a day, maybe with on a food tour.
Okay, so it's a combo.
Yeah, I like combo.
How about cheese plate or dessert?
Oh, dessert.
Easy one. And last, Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Los Angeles?
Oh, don't do that to me. It's very hard to be bi-coastal because, you know, you need more money. Manhattan, Brooklyn, are we talking about food only?
It's your interpretation of
okay. Hey, everyone, I have to say that Los Angeles, we know that all the New York chefs are coming out here, so let's say that Los Angeles right now is kind of winning in the food category.
Okay, it is a happening place, but yeah, yeah, there is a lot going on in the food scene. Okay, cool. That was the game.
Yay.
So industry news came out last week. There was an article, many articles, but this one was in the New York Times, entitled Graydon Carter to End 25-Year Run as Vanity Fair's Editor. This is by Michael Grinbaum. And so Graydon Carter, yeah, 25 years Vanity Fair. And he's leaving. He wants to leave when at a time when, you know, it's up and all positive, but it's, you know, he's established himself as a celebrity in his own right, being at the front of this magazine. I thought this was an appropriate thing to talk to you about as a writer. So what do you think?
I mean, I think, yeah, when I worked at Hearst,
all right.
You know, you would see Helen Gurley Brown every once in a while still walking out of there. And obviously, I mean, she wasn't. She was more a figurehead, I guess. But, I think it makes sense. I think that he should do something that he enjoys, and he's probably had a nice amount of time there to do everything he wanted to do. We know that he opened, you know, restaurant in the past, so who knows what's next. It says that he's taking a, quote, garden leave.
Right, a six-month garden leave, which, whatever that means, sounds nice.
Oh, yeah, in Provence.
maybe he wants to write something for you. What to do in Provence while you're there.
Well, he needs to know he should take the class so you can stay in Julia Child's country home there and take a week-long cooking program, so...
Well, if he's listening, then
I hope so.
Yeah, no, he's. I mean, it's been an incredible run, and he's covered. You know, I mean, he covered a lot in 25 years. And I think Waverly Inn, he's still running that as his restaurant. I don't know. We'll see if he opens more restaurants or goes in that direction. He could. We'll also have to wait and see who replaces him. You know, those. This article said something about maybe they're speculating like Adam Moss from New York Magazine or Joanna Coles from Hearst. It's like a high power position. So
sure. Yeah. And Janice Min, I think, was the other one.
Yeah. It was Janice Min, Hollywood Reporter. You're right.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, good for him. Good for him. And he also, his salary is doing quite well there. And his garden leave will be lovely.
Yeah.
So, that was one article. And the other one today in the New York Times. So Pete Wells reviewed a pizza place. I wonder if Scott's Pizza Tour has this on it. But this place in Jersey, in Jersey City called Raza. And he gave it 3 stars. And he said, as the title, is New York's best pizza in New Jersey. And it was a good read talking with Ed Levine of Serious Eats, who was his dining companion at least once, and Ed kept asking him, like, is this the best pizza in New York City, in New Jersey? Like, are you going to write that? And he kind of sort of did. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, we know that there's an endless, the appetite for pizza for New Yorkers is insatiable, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the question will be, you know, well, people go over to Jersey City. I'm sure, you know, they will have a following. We know that Porta started, I think, in Asbury Park, and it gets, you know, great reviews as well. So maybe there is a pizza thing happening in Jersey now.
Yeah, no, I remember I had Katie Parla on my show a while back, and she's from Jersey. She lives in Rome now. But I remember her, she was going to Raza, I think, like, over her visit. I remember hearing about it and knowing it has amazing pizza. I haven't been out there yet. I'm sure my parents listening are like, you haven't been someplace to try? I'm like, well, I got to get out there now. I mean, Jersey City is not hard to get to from Manhattan, but it is, you know, it is, you know, you got to plan for it. So I would like to go and try it. I mean,
I will go with you, except maybe not until I get back. So you go once and then you can go.
Okay. Well, we'll see when you get back. I could maybe hold off. I've held off. He's been open 5 years. I haven't been yet, but it sounds amazing. I mean, it's this wood burning pizza, and the reason Pete was saying it was so good was because it excels at both the dough and the toppings. It just has like a winning combination all around. So it made me and I think tons of people want to go. It's a bold statement to give it 3 stars, you know, it's a big review.
Yeah. I mean, I have to add too, that we're having a pizza moment here in Los Angeles, and, I agree about the dough and the crust, and the one here that everyone's buzzing about, and Jonathan Gold said was the best pizza he has had outside of Italy, is Pizzana, which is actually run by two guys who are from Naples. But, it's definitely, I mean, here it's, you know, we have Moza, that was the Batali mm-hmm. Bastianich Silverton machine, and that's been around for 10 years, but now for whatever reason, it's we're catching up to New York, where these Neapolitan pizza places are opening, and I'd say Pizzana, if you're next time you're here, that would be the place to go for pizza.
All right, I'm down for it. And I'm actually working with a very famous pizzaiolo from Naples. His name's Gino Sorbillo, and he's got like the number one pizza place in Naples and other locations in Italy. And he's opening in about a month on the Bowery. So I have a pizza client, and I think his pizza is amazing. So and like Pauly G's, and there's like we have awesome pizza here. But yeah, pizza in LA having a moment. I'm due to come out there as well.
Yeah, and gelato too, because we have the first. This is crazy to me, and it's in my own little neighborhood. The first outpost of the most famous gelateria in Rome opened walking distance from my apartment. So
it's dangerous.
I'm in a lot of trouble, but I'm also like, what does this mean? All these, you
know. What's it called? Do you know the name?
Fata Morgana. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now I'm hungry, and we're going to take another break. Before we do, I just wanted to also just mention another article in the New York Times today that I thought was a great read, that, and I was glad to see it, was there was a big feature story on Drew Neaport, outstanding restaurateur. It was written by Alan Richman. I think it's worth a read if people want to look out for that. And then I also just want to give a shout out to Taste Talks, which was this past weekend. They had this great conference in Brooklyn and Tasty Awards, and there were tons of amazing panels, and Heritage Radio had been nominated for the nonprofit category in the Tasties. They didn't get it. It went to Share Our Strength, which is an awesome organization, but it's awesome to be nominated and the whole thing. It was fun and a good time. So thank you, Taste Talks. And on that note, we're going to take one more break, come back and do my solo dining experience and the final question. So this is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. This week, it's at Amas. Here's the rundown. The location, Regshalevev 153, Copenhagen, Denmark. Or otherwise, I would say, it's located in what is known as the edgier, lesser-known part of Copenhagen on the harbor. The concept, modern Danish cuisine utilizing produce sourced from its garden. And according to its website, it says a holistic approach to food that not only prioritizes its guests and gastronomy, but also the environment and future as an industry. So the chef, Matt Orlando. Now, why did I go? Because I was solo traveling in Copenhagen. It was my first time there, and I had heard fabulous things about Amos and its ever-changing menu. So my experience. So I arrived for my 1 p.m. lunch reservation. I was seated at a large one-top table near the windows and facing the open kitchen in the spacious restaurant. Now, I didn't have to make any ordering decisions because it's a tasting menu, except for beverages. The staff was lovely. The vibe, it was a quiet place. There were some other solo diners there as well, and it was relaxing. Now, what did I get? So, a four-course tasting menu, and there were extra courses as well. They included fermented potato bread and vegetable dip, crispy pancake, fresh cheese, spring onion, and wormwood oil. There was tomato, red currant, beet, Douglas fir pine. There was chicken radish, fennel, plum, and caramelized milk. And there were two desserts, and one of them was s'mores. Yes, s'mores. It's delicious. And to drink, I had sparkling water, and I also had a glass of refreshing apple and fennel juice. Mm. So my take, super lovely presentations, utilizing fresh vegetables from the outside garden, which I could see from my seat. Unique flavor combinations that really worked, and it was the right amount of food for a tasting menu, because I find some tasting menus sometimes to be a little too much. But it was, everything was delicious, and the s'mores as the finale was like, put me over the top. The ambiance. So it's a cool, airy, industrial space. It has high ceilings. So you actually enter on the second floor, which is overlooking the space, and it's above the open kitchen, and then you walk down into this, like, it's industrial. It's cool. It had a very cool vibe to it. And then in the backyard, you can see they have all these windows, and you see the garden, which is alongside the waterfront in Copenhagen. So it's a really nice setting. I'd say it's perfect for food lovers who appreciate contemporary technique and fresh produce. Interesting tidbit. So Chef Orlando, a former Noma head chef who was originally from San Diego and has cooked in New York City at Per Se and some other restaurants, and his wife, who works in the front of the house at Amos. So I asked about if they were there that day, and they were not, because apparently they had a baby the day before. So I wanted to wish them congratulations. Sorry to miss them, but it's a very good excuse. Personal fun fact. So I did as the locals do, and I biked to the restaurant, and it was the best way to get around. I had a really good time biking in Copenhagen. So the cost of this meal was $141 US, that's converted, and including everything. Would I go back? Yes, I would. And their website is amosrestaurant.com. So I heard little signs of you there, Carrie.
That sounds amazing.
It was a really great meal.
It's on the list now.
Yeah, and it was mutual food friends who had recommended it, and everyone said it was an amazing place, and I agree, it was special. So I'm glad I went.
Yeah.
So that was Copenhagen, and now it's time for the final question. So next week my guest is Andrew Knowlton, and I had announced in before my last show before the summer that Andrew was going to be on. I thought it was going to be today, but we pushed it back to next week. So he's going to have two questions. I'm going to ask you if you can ask a question. For people who don't know, Andrew is the deputy editor of Bon Appetit magazine, and they just came out with their BA Top 10 Hot list of the hot 10 restaurants in the country. So I'll have to be talking to Andrew about that. So, Carrie, what would you like to ask Andrew?
Andrew, first of all, Andrew, I actually met many, 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 many years ago, and I haven't really seen him much since, but we were at the Little Owl when it first opened in, like, gosh, I don't know, when Gabriel Spillman was still there, and he hadn't opened anything else. So, and I love what Andrew does for Bon Appetit. It's really, really great. My question for Andrew is, it's sort of like a living or dead or both. What meal would he construct from any restaurant, living or dead, beginning with the appetizer, entree, and dessert? So his three-course meal designed by three different chefs from restaurants that are living or dead.
Wow, I love it. I thought you were going
to play this game with my friends sometimes, with one of my food-loving friends. His name is also Andrew, and we were going to make a board game out of it, but I think it's just we can just do it over this question with Andrew Knowlton.
Well, I thought you were going to go with the when people ask who you want to dine with, you know, living or dead.
Yeah.
But I've never heard this question before. Chef, it's original.
And it can be a meal. It can be a something, you know, I want to have the pearls and oysters from Per Se to start. I want to have, you know, for me, there's just so many places that are gone now, you know, that you sort of lament.
Right.
These old places. So I'd be more curious to hear what places that he misses in that answer.
Yeah, that's great. Do you have your three, or does it change all the time?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's true. What is mine? I can't remember the last time I was asked it what I thought. I think the one thing that I always think about is this meal I had in Portofino. Oh God, it was a long time ago, but it was just these langoustines, and you know, you eat them with your hands, and they, you know, it's just like a whole thing. But first, they feed you two pasta dishes, and then the langoustines, and then you have dessert, and then you have the digestivo, and then you have espresso. You know, it's just that meal. But I always was curious, what did they put in that sauce, that broth? It was like so addicting, and it really made your hands really smooth.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I didn't think you would say that either, but that's awesome. Well, great. That's a great question. I will ask him. I'll ask him if he remembers you from Little Owl.
Probably not.
So never know. Ago. Never know. So that's great. Well, that's the show. Thank you so much for coming on, and congratulations and everything you've done, and with launching Bitesy, I think it's amazing, and I look forward to seeing it grow, and any way I can contribute, I'm there.
Yes, I really would love that. Thanks for having me, Sherry.
You're welcome. I'll see you back in New York or maybe in LA soon.
Yeah, or somewhere else.
Or somewhere else, true.
Cool. Somewhere in between.
Yes. So my guest today has been Carrie Tannenbaum. She's a food writer, digital content strategist, and the founder of Bitesy, an online travel guide and booking platform for food-driven explorers. Her website is bitesy.com. That's BITESEE.com. And on social media, at Bitesy. On social media, I'm at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry, and my websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. You can find me there, and you can also find all of our archive shows at HeritageRadioNetwork.org, and we are on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can subscribe, and you can leave reviews, too. You can do all this fun stuff. So go to iTunes, subscribe to my show, and leave me a review. I'd love to hear what you think after 152 episodes. So thanks again to Carrie and to my engineer today, Vitor. I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next Wednesday at 4 p.m. with another live show. Hope you'll tune in then. And thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
For listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.